This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Flashback Friday edition of the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. As he rapidly approaches 1,000 episodes of this podcast, he has handpicked individual episodes that he feels is going to be good review for you to prepare you for the future by listening to the past. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Thank you so much for joining me today, and I am coming to you from San Diego, California. I'm here after our Meet the Masters for a couple of days. Got a little business here and a few things to do before I head back home. Just wanted to present this episode today, which is Dr. Ben Carson. He's a neurosurgeon, also a political candidate. So he's going to talk about how to save America. And, you know, I always kind of wonder how much saving America really needs. Like I've said many times before, if you look at the math, and you look at some of the obligations this country has, it needs a lot of saving. But then you look outside of the math and you look at the other things America has going for it, which are pretty tremendous too. I don't know. I just don't know. But certainly one of the things that we talked about in depth this last weekend at our Meet the Masters event is American real estate versus international real estate. And when we had Diane Kennedy speak about things, she does some offshore planning for some of her clients as a CPA, also advising them on some asset protection strategies. And, you know, the one thing we can come back to just over and over again, even after I've interviewed numerous, I mean, dozens and dozens of guests on my Jet Setter show, and I know many of you listen to that podcast as well, on the subject of international investing and real estate overseas, it just, I mean, nothing even comes close to the American opportunity for real estate investing. Because remember what I say, income property or real estate in general in the United States has basically been subsidized since the Great Depression. So many of us get disappointed and discouraged and upset about Obamacare, about welfare, about people getting disability benefits by faking their way into it. And you know, Dan Ammerman, who I've had on the show many times, talks about how we've never seen so many young, seemingly healthy people who have suddenly become disabled when their unemployment benefits end. And you know, all of this is obviously a huge problem. That said, you know, if you want a handout, if you want to take advantage of some of this government largesse as a real estate investor, just go get a loan that's a Fannie Mae type agency loan or a Freddie Mac type agency loan. And there are your government perks and your government handouts. So it's really true. I mean, around the world, one of the things one of our speakers said this last weekend at Meet the Masters of Income Property was that around the world, there are only two places on planet Earth where out of what, 190 to 210 countries, depending on who you're talking to and how you define a country, where you can get a 30-year mortgage. It's truly an incredible opportunity. And think of it, if you buy income property today and you keep that income property for hopefully 27.5 years, and you know why I say that, those of you in the know that that's the depreciation schedule. If you keep that income property through the depreciation schedule or even through 30 years, when you make the last payment, or I should say your tenant, because you've outsourced the debt, makes the last payment on that mortgage, you won't pay that mortgage off until 2045. Now, the projections show that by 2045, instead of there being around 310 million people in the country, there will be around 400 million people in the United States by then.
Remember, you're listening to Flashback Friday,
Our new episodes are published every Monday and Wednesday. Think of what that's going to do for housing demand. Think of what that's going to do for rental housing demand. At Meet the Masters, in my opening keynote session, I talked about this demographic tidal wave coming at rental housing, which has easily been the best it's ever been in U.S. history. Out of, what, 230-some-odd years that the country has been around, the tidal wave, the demographic tidal wave coming at rental housing right now over the next decade is nothing short of a miracle, a phenomenal opportunity for investors. Generation Y, the largest demographic cohort in U.S. history, larger than the baby boomers by a small margin of 4 million people. Putting off marriage, putting off household formation, needing mobility to go where the jobs are, saddled with huge student loan debt, and during their formative years, mostly teenage years, seeing their parents get burned in the Great Recession and in the housing, the subprime crisis. I mean, all of those things and more add up to phenomenal demographics coming at rental housing over the next decade. So you take that, plus you take the fact that you can keep that mortgage for three decades, till 2045, when we're going to have another 100 million people almost in the country, where we're going to have massive increases in housing demand and probably massive, massive amounts of inflation and benefiting from inflation-induced debt destruction. All of these things coalesce to create the perfect storm for investors. So take advantage of that. If you do the math, then, you know, if you just look at the country's math, yes, America needs a lot of saving. Okay, it needs a lot of fixing. And I agree with that. That's true, certainly from a mathematical perspective. But from a leadership in the world stage perspective, from a reserve currency perspective, from a biggest military and bully pulpit perspective, wow. The U.S. has the huge advantage and a giant trump card from that perspective. So who knows the way it will all go? Nobody knows. You know, when I was flying to Aruba about, I guess, a little over a month ago now, I was looking through the airline magazine and I saw this fantastic quote. It was on an ad by Arthur C. Clarke, the futurist, the science fiction guy. I remember reading a lot of his work when I was a kid. Well, way back in 1964, he said, "The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic." Let me repeat that. The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. And he said that in 1964. And I would say that even so far, not predicting out into any more of the future beyond what we've already experienced since 1964, it has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, could we have ever imagined the kind of incredible innovations that we have seen since then? And if we just allow free people in free markets to innovate, to let their creativity flourish, if we get the intrusive companies invading our privacy and collecting our data, if we keep them at bay, if we keep the overreaching dictatorial power-hungry governments and politicians at bay, if we keep the war-loving central bankers and bankers in general at bay, if we keep the Wall Street crooks at bay, we keep the fake environmentalists at bay who want to control our every move, if we keep the terrorists who want us to live in the 7th century at bay, and we allow free people and free markets to do their thing, if we step back and keep all these forces at bay, Arthur C. Clarke was right. The future will be absolutely fantastic. And Peter Diamantis and Stephen Kotler, we did a show on them before. I think it was maybe episode, let me look it up here for you. Episode 267. Isn't that unbelievable? That was almost 200 episodes ago. It feels like it was fairly recent, but that was almost 200 episodes ago here on the show. Amazing. And their book, Abundance, The Future is Better Than You Think. If we just embrace some of this stuff, wow, it's an incredible time to be alive. It's an amazing time to be alive. So we've got a lot to look forward to. Check out jasonhartman.com for other prior podcast episodes for some fantastic properties. I know we held a lot of properties for the buyers that attended Meet the Masters. And by the way, a lot of you who attended purchased a lot of properties there over the weekend. So thank you for doing that. Enjoy your fantastic investments. I want to wish you happy investing. And many of you told me it's just been a pleasure reading the evaluations But many of you came up to me and said and put in the evaluations for the speakers that this was our best Meet the Masters event today. So you've raised the bar for us, and hopefully we raise the bar on what to expect at the next one. And hopefully our 17th Meet the Masters event, the next one, will be even better than this one. So go to jasonhartman.com, check out some of the properties. We will have more released because our local market specialists were holding many properties for the event. But now that the event is over and anything that wasn't purchased will be released on the website. You can find them at jasonhartman.com. We've still got that little bug that we're trying to fix, by the way, on the site. So if you find a property you like there, please do not inquire by filling out the web form right there at the property, because we may not get it. We've had some problems with that little app that we're trying to fix. But just go to the Contact Us page and contact us through there, and one of our investment counselors will get a hold of you and help you purchase that property. So with that, let's get to our guest, Dr. Ben Carson. Here we go. It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Ben Carson to the show. He is a famed conservative neurosurgeon and author of the book One Nation, What We Can All Do to Save America's Future. Very timely title, Ben. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to be with you.
Good, good. It's good to have you. You're coming to us from where are you located today?
Today I am in Ketchum, Idaho.
Uh-huh, fantastic. And are you campaigning?
No, actually I was here on some business and enjoying the beautiful summertime here.
Good, good stuff. So are you considering a run for presidency?
A lot of people think that I should be, it appears, but it's not something that was on my bucket list when I retired. I was actually thinking more in terms of learning how to play the organ and improving my golf game. But it seems like...
I don't think Obama's presidency hasn't interfered with his golf game.
Yeah, you're right. I could probably play more. But I am, you know, certainly listening to all the voices. And, you know, I was on a 29-city bus tour the week before last, in 8 days, by the way. And the crowds were just so overwhelming every place that we went. And there were so many people saying, oh, you got to do it. You got to do it. What I'm going to do is just kind of wait and see what happens in November. And because that'll be a very good indication to me about the temperament of the nation. Are people sort of happy with big government being into every aspect of their lives? Or are they ready to move back toward a more traditional America? And that will help me decide.
Yeah. Well, big government never leads to good things. It always leads to oppression and poverty and everything else bad. But they keep trying this experiment over and over. And you know, it would seem, Ben, that history would be our guide by now. We have so many bad examples of big government, you know?
You would think so. Well, this so-called utopian society that they're always striving to achieve, it always ends up looking the same way, with a small group of elites at the top who lead luxurious lives and control everything, a rapidly shrinking middle class, and a vastly expanded dependent class.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Flashback Friday. Our new episodes are published every Monday and every Wednesday. No question about it. So big government is utopian for those who run big government and the insiders and the cronies, but it's terrible for everybody else. It really is. Well, since you have an obvious great background in medicine, I thought maybe I'd first ask you about the Affordable Care Act, as it's so inappropriately named, I think. But, you know, what do you think about the medical issue? It's obviously a huge part of our economy. I kind of hate to keep talking about it on the show, but it is this giant mammoth thing. And it's been the, according to Obama, the crowning achievement of his presidency. I beg to differ, but...
Well, I think it is a crowning achievement for him. In the sense that he wants to fundamentally change the nation. And of course, if you go and look at the writings of Alinsky and Lenin and people of that nature, and they talk about how important it is when you're trying to move to their, quote, utopian society, to make the population dependent first upon the government. And that the best way to do that is to take control of the most important thing they have, which is their health care. And it's surprising to me that more people don't read this literature and actually know what's going on here. This Health Care Act was not about health care. It was about control. And we have much better and much easier ways to provide good health care. First of all, you only have 15% of the people who didn't have it. So why would you, turn the whole system upside down for that reason? That makes no sense at all. So that should have told people right there. But at any rate, there are some excellent alternatives. I talk about them in the book, the way you can use health savings accounts, for example, with a variety of different ways of funding them and providing them for virtually every American, which puts people in charge of their own health care, them and their doctors. That brings the whole medical system into the free market, and that's what controls quality and that's what controls price. And that would be a much simpler way to do it. It would put everybody on equal footing. What we're going toward now is a two-tiered system where those who have money, can have the concierge-type medicine and everybody else waits in line forever. This is not going to be useful in the long run.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. And, the shortages just always occur. It's the most basic, simple rule of economics. If you disincentivize people to go into the career, and I already hear complaints from doctors saying they're looking for other opportunities. They're really thinking about their career. I mean, kids who are thinking about medical school are thinking about not doing it, literally just because of Obamacare, for that one reason only.
Well, private practice is getting to be a thing of the past. Nobody can afford to do it anymore. And I talked to so many of my colleagues who are just disgusted. And they say, gosh, you're so lucky you retired. I'm just looking forward to the day when I can retire. And, I want medicine to be fun again. And that's why I'm working with a number of people in Congress, with the Heritage Society, and with a group of people to make sure that there is a good alternative in place, because this system will collapse. There's no question about that. And, the issue will then be, well, should we just go to a single-payer system? That would be the simplest thing. We want to make sure there's in place something that's easy to understand and that's highly desirable before that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. So talk to us about some of the other areas of your book, if you would, just some of the hot buttons. You cover quite a bit in here. You talk a lot about the future, a lot about what's going to happen to America. But, this disunity
One of the reasons that it's entitled One Nation is to emphasize the fact that our unity is our strength, traditionally has been what made America great and exceptional. And those who want to fundamentally change America know that it is necessary to, first of all, divide America. And therefore, you see them driving a wedge into every little crack and crevice to create a war on women, racial wars, income wars, age wars, religious wars, whatever. There's a war on it. And it's become very effective. And, we're as divided as you can almost possibly be and still survive at this point in time. You take issues that shouldn't even be partisan. For instance, the IRS scandal. And we've got people divided on partisan lines. I mean, this is something that affects everybody. It affects the very freedom that we have as Americans. But you have people dividing us on different sides. It's unbelievable. And this will destroy America. And I want people to understand that, it's actually okay to disagree with somebody on something. In fact, you can learn a lot more from somebody you disagree with than somebody who agrees with you all the time. And to have a conversation, to start talking, because, you look to the great radical, Saul Alinsky, and his rules for radicals, one of the things he said is never have a conversation with your adversary because that humanizes them and your job is to demonize them. So they don't want you to have a conversation. And it's sort of like with a marriage. Before people divorce, what happens? they stop talking. The next thing you know, their spouse is the devil incarnate, you know? And this is what we're doing to each other, rather than having those very important conversations, because I think most Americans will find that we have very similar thoughts, aspirations, desires, but we've been manipulated and whipped up into a frenzy, sort of like on the playground when you were, a youngster and you had the troublemaker who'd go around to this kid and say, "Hey, he's talking about your mama." And then he'd go to the other one, "He's talking about," you know, trying to stir up, you know, people, and they sit back and relax and enjoy the fight that ensues. Well, that's what's going on. That's what's going on in our country right now. But they have.
Well, you know, that's the first rule of warfare, right? Divide and conquer, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they're doing. And we, the people, have got to be smart enough to see what's going on and stop allowing it. The other thing that is frightening to me is the fact that people have been beaten into submission. And they're afraid. They're afraid to express themselves. Is somebody going to call them a name? Are they going to lose their job? Are they going to have an IRS audit? You know, it's not the free America that I knew growing up, and that certainly we inherited from those who preceded us who were brave. You think about people like Nathan Hale, a teenage rebel, a spy. When he was caught and ready to be executed by the British, he wasn't whining and complaining and shaking in his boots. He said, "My only regret is that I have but one life to give for my nation." Think about that kind of courage. And you know,
you wouldn't have that nowadays.
Yeah. Think about those guys, D-Day, you know, invading the beaches of Normandy, stepping over the bodies of their dead comrades, thousands being mowed down, but not turning back and fighting, knowing that they would probably be killed so that you and I could live in freedom. You know, that's the kind of courage that has characterized America. And we must at least be brave enough to think about those who are coming behind us. And, you know, I think in particular about, you know, I grew up in Detroit, and, you know, it was once the most prosperous city in the nation, and now it's the biggest bankruptcy.
You know what I like to say, Ben? I like to say that Detroit is the poster child for big government socialist disaster. I mean, it is just the saddest story ever. I mean, Detroit was not only one of the most amazing cities in the country. It was a flagship city of the entire world. I mean, you know, look at what came from Detroit. It was incredible. But then prosperity, you know, the lull to apathy, big bureaucracy, unions just drove the businesses out and corrupt politicians.
It all worked together.
Sure
to destroy a city. And it's a harbinger of what will happen to our nation, the exact same thing. If we continue down this pathway, you know, I'm particularly alarmed, you know, having spent most of my life, you know, dealing with children and the welfare of children, recognizing what we are doing to their future with our reckless spending. $17.5 trillion moving rapidly toward $18 trillion in terms of the national debt, a number that most people can't comprehend. But if you try to pay it back at $1 billion a day, it would take you almost 50 years. I mean, it's just a ridiculous number. And the only reason we can sustain it, of course, is because we are the world reserve currency. And as you probably know, China, Russia, and some others are making noises about that right now, saying that we don't deserve to be the world reserve currency because of our reckless fiscal policies. And they may have a point. But if we're not the reserve currency, it means we can't print money anymore. If we can't print money with the level of debt that we have, I mean, Greece, here we come. You know, Occupy Wall Street would be a walk in the park compared to what you'd see going on. And we're just around the corner from that.
Yeah, well, I agree with you mathematically, but I think that the only thing that really keeps and probably will keep, at least for the foreseeable future, the U.S. in the reserve currency position is the military we have. We're the bully of the bloc. You know, I'm not saying it's right, it's not fair, but it is. It is what it is, and we will defend our dollar with our battleships and our incredible military.
Although our military is rapidly being decimated, You know, you look at over 100 generals have been fired, have had to leave involuntarily. The budgetary cuts, the morale in the military is as low as it has ever been. I've gotten a lot of inside information from military people. This is not a good situation. All of these things, it seems like everything is moving toward, you know, a place that is not good for our nation. It worries me. But here's the good thing that I've noticed. As I travel around the country, red states, blue states, north, south, east, west, just huge, enthusiastic crowds of people, many of them elderly, who said they had given up on America and they were just waiting to die. And now they think maybe there's some hope. And I think we have to keep talking about the things that are positive. We have to stop going along to get along, because when you do that, the secular progressives win by default. That's what political correctness is all about. Shut up. Just don't even talk about it. Don't mention it. In the meantime, we will completely change the fabric of the nation. That's what's happening to America right now. And, you know, the other thing that I talk about a lot in the book is the importance of knowledge, of knowing history, of knowing current events. You know, I was looking at a news show not too long ago, and they were interviewing people on the street, young people, and they wanted to know who sings the happy song. Everybody knew the answer. And then they said, what can you tell me about Benghazi? Virtually no one knew. They thought, that's a singer, isn't it? Benghazi. Yeah. I mean, that's how bad it is. And, of course, the founders of our nation were very wary of that. And they said that our system and our freedom is dependent on a well-informed and educated populace. They said if we ever become less than that, the nature of the country will change rapidly. And why did they feel that way? Because then people would not have the wherewithal to interpret what people were telling them. And a slick, dishonest politician or dishonest media could easily lead people wherever they wanted to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of where we are. It's amazing. So what else do you think we can do what can we do to change the mindset? The problem we have is we've got, you know, 47% of the people, as Romney famously said, who are getting something from the government. And no amount of logic or reason will overcome someone's selfish desire to get something for free, it seems. You know, It's just a bad situation.
It's a good point. But, you know, I've always said since the time that 47% comment was made by Mitt Romney, I said, what a golden opportunity for him to now say, but when I become president, my top priority is to provide a ladder for those people so that they can climb out of that 47% and claim the American dream. And we're going to do everything we can to make this economy what it needs to be in order to provide the fruition of those dreams for them. Because that really is the key. You know, you look at what's happening right now. You have the heavy foot of government regulations on the neck of business and industry. Dozens of new regulations coming out every single week, encircling business, industry, academia, every aspect of our lives. Anybody who doesn't cooperate, you just pull the noose on them. And that's how, you know, traditionally communist and socialist government control everything. We're doing the same thing. Most of our people have no idea that that's what's going on. You couple that with draconian taxation. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And then we sit there and we complain about the fact that companies are doing business overseas. Well, that indicates a fundamental misunderstanding of business and of capitalism. People don't go into business to support the government. They go into business to make money. You have to understand that. And you have to create an environment that is conducive to the growth and innovation of business. Look at our neighbors up north, Canada. A few years ago, they realized that and they slashed their corporate tax rate to less than half of ours. And what happened? big swooshing sound, as Ross Perot used to say. Things start moving up north. You know, England recently realized that too, and they're now having a rebound. You know, why do we have to be the last ones to understand that?
You know what amazes me about the left is that you talk to some of these leftists, especially the ivory tower type that think too much, and whenever they in their own lives go to purchase something, they do the simple thing of shopping around and comparing. Yet they don't think, for some reason, companies, executives will do the same thing. Of course, companies shop for the most favorable place to do business, right? I mean, what a logical idea. But for some reason, they should be enslaved and forced to do business in places like the Socialist Republic of California, my home state. And you know, they shouldn't be entitled to shop around and shop for a better venue, like you know, the way the liberal shops for the best deal on Birkenstocks. I'm, you know, joking, of course, but not completely.
That's the modus operandi of the progressive movement. It seems to apply to other people, but they don't apply to us. I mean, look at the IRS right now. We don't have to keep records, or we can lose them, or they can disappear. But you better not do that. it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd what's going on.
It really is. It really is. It's just crazy. Well, any messages of hope, big ideas? We'd love to hear them as you wrap up here.
Well, my parting words would be, think back to the pre-revolutionary days of this nation. The Patriots were very unhappy about old King George III and his tyrannical declaration. And what they started doing is calling town meetings and meeting in their barns and meeting wherever. They even invited the loyalists. And they talked about the America that they dreamed of and that they wanted. And what were they willing to fight for? And what did they want to pass down to their children? And by doing that on a regular basis, they gained courage. And that's how a ragtag bunch of militiamen defeated the most powerful empire on earth. And we need to do that again today. You need to start getting together with the people in your sphere of influence, your neighbors, your colleagues, your friends, your extended family, and talking about the America that you want and that you want to leave behind for your children. And what are you willing to do for it? And you need to talk to your uncle who hasn't voted in 20 years and make sure he understands what the stakes are. And if he's an invalid, help him to get an absentee ballot. And if he's partially blind, help them to fill it out. But we all have to get involved, recognizing that in the last presidential election, more people did not vote than voted for either candidate. We need to get those people activated once again and start moving. And I think we can do this. And I think, and when I say we, I'm talking about people with common sense. When we take control of government, we can't just like say, well, this is what they did to us, so this is what we don't do to them. No, we have to put the Constitution front and center. We can't pick and choose the laws that we want to enforce. We can't pick and choose the groups that we want to be winners and losers. You know, we have to remember that this is supposed to be an egalitarian nation where we treat everybody the same. And when we do that, and we take off all the silly regulations, we begin to develop our natural resources, we use the Environmental Protection Agency to work with academia and with business and industry to find the safest ways to use our abundant natural resources so that we can reduce energy prices, which affect the poor. They don't affect the rich. That's what things like that cause this big gap. You know, these are the things we need to address in this nation again. We can do that. We can rapidly return this to a nation that is fair and just for everyone.
Yeah, great points. Well, Dr. Ben Carson, thank you so much for joining us today. Tell us where people can find you and buy your book as well.
RealBenCarson.com. And the book is, it should be pretty much everywhere except in very liberal bookstores.
It's banned there to the people that support freedom and free speech, right?
Yes. It was number one on the New York Times bestseller list until last week when Hillary's book knocked it to number two.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a comparison. Your book on Amazon has 4.5 stars, and you have a lot of reviews. You have 211 reviews, and Hillary's book has only 2 stars with 845 reviews. So I think you're definitely winning in the literary world for sure. So keep up the good work. Thank you so much for joining us, Ben.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.